Hello and welcome into the 17th episode of the Thoughts from the Bench podcast. My name is Lucas Jett. I am your host and I am joined with Austin Guthrie. Austin is my co-host and we are joined by a special guest. He is a writer for the Des Moines Register and it is Tommy Birch. Tommy, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
I'm good. I'm
Doing
good.
great.
I'm good. Tommy has, I'm pretty sure, patented the phrase Manny Watch. I'm not entirely sure, but I'm pretty sure based on Twitter that he has patented that. If you haven't no figured this out yet, Manny Ramirez has joined the Iowa Cubs and will be in uniform for tomorrow's game. And Tommy, how is the vibe around the park just after the Manny announcement and during this whole Manny Watch era?
When the announcement first came that Manny was going to be joining the Iowa Cubs, it was insane. It was electric. Twitter was going nuts. The team's Facebook page, people around the park, everybody wanted to talk Manny. But that was May 25th that it was announced, and it's kind of drug out for a little while. He went to extended spring training, it worked out, and man, a lot's happened since then. Chris Bryant got here, and he kind of took away some of the excitement and just the whole idea that Manny's taken so long to get here. It's kind of worn off a little bit, but now that people know when he's going to be here, there's a lot more excitement. I think that first home game, it's going to be a zoo. It's going to be mass pandemonium at the stadium. I'm a low key guy. I'm not sure how I feel about a whole circus invading, but it'll be exciting.
And since that month that he originally signed on, I guess, how many times have you been asked about when Manny's coming? Over 1,000, roughly?
Oh man, if I had a penny, I mean, yeah, I only, yeah, a penny for every time, I would not, I would be working for fun. It would be a hobby. I mean, everybody asked me, I had friends, opposing people in the media. That might be the most astounding part is other local media members that are like, come on, between you and I, what's the deal? Like, I'm holding this story and like for a rainy day. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, if that's the case, it's been pouring for weeks. Like, I would have brought this sucker out a long time ago. My wife, people have asked her at work when I'm out and about, and people, a lot of my friends or people at the bars that know what I do, they always ask me kind of the inside scoop. So, man, outside of opposing media, I mean, every day on Twitter. The funny thing is, when I'm updating things on Twitter, like Josh Bitters is, going to the DL, or, Wada threw a bullpen today and it looked great, little stuff. People just randomly chime in like, "Well, do you have a Manny update?" Like, "Oh yeah, I was getting to that. That's coming." So I'm excited that that's all kind of done with. Now the big question I got already is when is Manny leaving?
I thought originally when I saw, I think Brett Taylor, Bleacher Nation, was the first article I saw drop it, and I was just, I thought it was a joke. I had no idea. I was like, oh, Manny Ramirez, is that a Cuban player they signed or somebody that's getting assigned to AAA? There's no way it's this Manny Ramirez.
Yeah, same with me. I didn't fully comprehend. I didn't fully comprehend what I was reading. I kind of double take when I got the press release. I go, "What? Is this real life?" I was in the press box at Principal Park, the home of the Iowa Cubs, and it was maybe an hour. It was maybe 2 hours before game time, and it was a day game. Usually Sunday day games, I leave manager Marty Peavy alone. I give him his space until after the game. That's when I start hounding him. And I was kind of eating the pregame meal, and I'm like, "What?" And I said to the people in the press box, I go, "Is this real life?" And I went sprinting down to the clubhouse. It's pre I'm not in the best shape of my life. I got down there pretty quick, and he knew exactly what I wanted to talk about. And I The thing I've told a lot of people is rarely does it happen in our line of work that when somebody sends out a press release, it's a complete shock that it's actually news. Usually somebody digs it up or it's kind of hinted at, but just about everybody I've talked to, nobody saw it coming.
And what was the reaction, like you said, with Marty Peavy, the manager? What was the reaction around the clubhouse when that news came out?
A lot of wide eyes. I think everybody was really excited about the idea. I mean, that's a guy that's hit 555 home runs, and if anything, it's a lot of intrigue and just interest and a lot of question marks. Like, what's he gonna do? I don't know if any of the guys on the team saw it coming. I think they were all blindsided by it too. Probably the person that had the coolest reaction was Javier Baez, who said he grew up a big Manny Ramirez fan. Like, that was his favorite player, and I think he's probably been the most excited. Often, kind of the side, you could kind of hear the buzz amongst players. Like, are you kidding me? Manny Ramirez? He's gonna be here? And I think they were kind of like, you guys, is this real life? And it
Yeah.
is. It is very much real.
Austin, you got anything?
That's just I think that it's crazy to think that like he's still. I thought that he had completely fallen off like the face of the earth for a while, and it's crazy to think that someone, he's not only is he a great home run hitter, but people don't realize that he has over a .310 career batting average, which is incredibly solid for a power hitter. I think that it's just incredible the Cubs down to die, and people are going to bring up, his past and his failures in life, and I think that that actually even means more in his coaching up of Javier Baez. So I could not believe it.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting thing. A lot of people want to think about what he's done, and I think it from the sounds of it, that's already turned into a giant teaching tool. And from the people I've talked to that have been in Arizona, that have seen him firsthand, I don't want to say they're surprised with how helpful he's been, but they've definitely been very impressed. And it sounds like Manny's among the first people there at the park early, one of the last to leave, and sounds like he's kind of the scuttlebutt is that he's been involved in some of the Bible study stuff too. So, if he is really as different of a person, and not the Manny being Manny character that he's often made out to be, this could be a really really good fit for him, but you never really know.
And switching gears, I know, I mean, Manny, we could go on hours
Oh,
discussion on Manny Ramirez, but we'll jump on to another guy who we could talk about hours, and that's Chris Bryant. Have you gotten lost in his eyes?
not yet. I will say he is a handsome looking fellow, and you can see the young ladies around the park. They really love them some Chris Bryant. So he is a very well spoken, very mature, and a fantastic baseball player. So I'm sure a lot of it, the way I wrote about it was, he's almost like the All-American boy. If there really is a girl next door, then Chris Bryant's probably the guy that has her.
Yeah, listening to his interviews and just I spoke to him at the Cubs convention in January. He seems so mature for his age. I mean, I know he's 22, but he just seems years beyond, like he's done this for 10, 15 years.
Absolutely. I don't want to say I was trying to catch him off guard. It was a legitimate question, but one of the first things I asked him when he first got here was, did you even feel like you were being tested in double A? Was it even a competition anymore? A lot of guys that would put up the numbers that he did, a lot of guys that are young as he is, would have probably have, brushed off and been like, no, this is no problem. I'm ready to play at Triple A. I don't know what the hell took so long. But he almost wanted to say that. He kind of paused, took his time, gathered his thoughts, put together a well thought out answer, which more than anything he's done, that's probably impressed me. That and, you know, the autograph stuff. I mean, I've never seen a guy that signs quite as many autographs as him. I've kind of told people around Des Moines, if you want Chris Bryant's autograph, you're going to get it. And I don't know if anybody in Des Moines is going to be without Chris Bryant autograph by the time this dude leaves.
Well, I hope I leave July 2nd with his autograph because I'm staying until I get
You may not have a problem. Just
it.
go down that third baseline or before or after the game or hang outside the Cub Club and you're probably gold.
Let's hope he can raise his zero BABIP too. I mean, he must be unlucky in AAA so far.
It's feast or famine with that guy, man. He needs to get some singles or doubles or triples, but I'm sure they're fine with him just hitting home runs.
Yeah, as I'm referring to for the listeners that don't know, Chris Bryant has 5 hits all year and they're all home runs. So he has not put in a ball, he's not got been safe in a ball in play so far. With a guy you mentioned earlier, Javier Baez, how has his development turned? I know he was struggling in April, and how has that turned in May and June?
I think the Cubs front office people want it to be a lot better traditionally. The start of May is when he's really gotten hot. He's always been a really slow starter. Not much of a surprise there. They struggle this time around. I think the level at which he struggled, that was a little bit of a concern. But we all knew he was going to pick it up a notch, and he has, but he's still got 2 or 3 notches that he can go up. He's making adjustments. You know, the big thing was when he first got to Des Moines, he was chasing everything out of the zone. He probably the easiest guy to get out in terms of you threw him 3 or 4 sliders out of the zone, he was going to chase them. Most of his hits early on came on mistakes, guys for some reason thinking they could sneak a fastball by him. You know, there's one time where he was down 0-2 in the count, and the logical thing would have been throw him a third slider. But the opposing pitcher was like, well, I'm going to show him a fastball. And he crushed it out of the park. So he's getting better about that. He's laying off a lot of those bad pitches and starting to be more selective. And tell you what, with Chris Bryant in the lineup, that's only going to help. I think it's only a matter of time before Chris moves up into that four hole and really sets the stage for Javi to start getting a lot more fastballs. And once he starts getting more fastballs, he's going to get more confidence too.
Yeah, with another guy that I just love watching play, Arismendi Alcantara. I can never say his last name right. There's so many variations I've heard, but what have you seen from him, and how close is he to the majors?
Man, he's got to be really close. He's very impressive. He can run. He can hit. He can play reasonably good defense. Shortstop was his natural home. They moved him to second. They're kind of testing him in the outfield. And he had a little bit of early struggles at second base. I think a lot of those were, you know, concentration lapses. Kind of the same thing with Baez. When Baez is really focused, he's going to make those plays and has the potential to make some really outstanding plays. But the thing is with Alcantara is he almost looks more comfortable in the outfield. He looks like a natural out there. So he's a guy that's already hit for average, and he's shown a lot of pop in his bat and can steal some bases and get you some doubles and triples. So if they need a middle infielder, it's probably him or Logan Watkins that's getting the call pretty soon.
I remember listening to a podcast earlier in the year, and Jason Parks kind of sort of indirectly compared him to Jose Reyes, and I see a lot of those comparisons with him.
Absolutely. A lot of speed, good pitch selection when he goes up to the plate, very mature kid. He's very close if he's not ready right now.
Austin, you got anything?
I got nothing more than what you got.
Oh, that's good.
Come on, Austin. Let's see what you got.
I mean, Luke really hits on everything. I don't think that there's anything that gets by this kid. Outside of, I mean, just looking at Luke's Twitter, you can tell that Javier Baez is probably a soulmate.
Chris Bryant's got to be moving up there soon too.
He's getting there, but in all your how many years have you covered the iCubs?
I'd helped fill in a little bit in the past, but this is my second time being the main guy, I'd say, for maybe parts of 4 or 5 years.
And this is probably the best minor league team you've seen, roster wise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No question. Great. They got prospects everywhere. Second, short, third. Matt Caesar is even kind of in that prospect conversation. You've got some good pitchers with Hendricks Bieler. Sounds like he's heading up to Chicago to start part of that day night doubleheader.
Yeah, Saturday.
Some good middle relievers. And the cool, probably the most interesting story, which I'm looking forward to doing, hopefully, is Lawson Lacaze. You've got two other first round draft picks on this team in Brett Jackson and Josh Bitters. And I mean, man, at one point they were Javier Baez and Chris Bryant.
Well, don't say that too loud because Cubs fans might change their perception on Baez and Bryant.
I don't mean to scare you guys too much.
No, but all right. Well, thank you, Tommy, for coming on, and we appreciate it. I'll be out to Iowa in July. Hope to see you.
Cool. Sounds good. Stop by.
All right,
All
we'll
right.
do.
See you later,
Thank you,
Tommy.
Tommy. That was Tommy Burch of the Des Moines Register, and what a nice guy. I'm glad he took a couple minutes and came on the podcast to talk with us.
Great guy.
Yeah, good insight. I'm glad. It's about as much as you talk throughout the whole interview.
You do the Cubs minor league stuff. I mean, I know Baez and Chris Bryant and obviously Manny Ramirez, but when you get into other guys, I don't. Everyone outside of that, I had no idea who they were. So.
All right, that's fair. Another kind of big news. Duncan Keith won his second Norris Trophy. His first one came in 2010, and he won the Norris Trophy is the league's best defenseman, so he won that again, which is a huge honor. Good for him.
Happy for him. I felt like it should have been Seabrook.
Yeah, about that.
I joke. No, really. I mean, I think that. I mean, I don't disagree with him not being the best defenseman in the game. So happy for him. Wish we'd still won the cup, though.
Yeah, I agree with that. Another thing that was kind of big Blackhawks news, the Hawks are in a report rumored to be the one of the two teams that's going to trade for Ryan Kesler, the center for the Canucks. Do you see this?
Yes, I did for saw that we were looking to give up Sharp for him. Should
Yeah.
be a solid trade. Not that I have anything against Sharp, but
I
I
don't.
think that I think a change might need to happen. I mean,
I don't think I'd give up Sharp.
not that Sharp's not a good player, because I like Sharp. Sharp's a good guy and a great player, but I think that Kessler gives us an extra element. And
There's
I don't know. I've kind of been a Kessler fan, so.
no like emotional attachment to what I'm saying. I think Mark Lazarus brought up a good point that Kessler's got a lot of miles on him with the Olympics a couple of years. And with Sharp, I think he's coming into the prime of his career. I mean, he led the Blackhawks in goals the last 2 years, I believe. And I think you can fill that second line center internally with somebody, hit Ben Smith. And I think that'd be a serviceable person to fill that spot.
I agree. I mean, you kind of just took what I was going to say about Ben Smith, but
Because we love Ben Smith.
I think that we can fill it internally. I don't think that it would be as good of an option as if we were to get Kessler.
Take the
So, I
back.
mean, I approve if they want to do a Kessler for Sharp trade. Kessler's a little bit more of a veteran guy. I don't know what else. I mean, there really hasn't been, like, no serious talk has been had. It's just that we're interested in Tesla and Sharp is on the block, basically.
Yeah, I saw another thing that I think Mark tweeted. It said they could give up Brandon Saad or Tuvo, that young prospect, Tuvo. I can't say his last name, so I'm not going to try.
Yeah. No, I know who you're talking about. I think I saw the same tweet.
That's a no-brainer deny for me.
Yeah, I am not a fan of trading Saad.
Yeah, I think Saad's coming into his own.
And there is emotional attachment to that one, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, I mean, I don't want the Hawks to trade Ben Smith either. I mean, there's no emotional attachment to that. But yeah, I agree with you. That's definitely a big thing. Emotional attachments are coming with these players, I feel like, and that could not necessarily a good thing, but it's all right, I guess.
It can be. I mean, it develops like a fan base.
Well,
so.
Yeah, but like once somebody
as
gets.
As long as it doesn't get in the way of the. I mean, it is a business, so. And I think that's the toughest thing, especially probably my favorite big guy that I've seen on the Blackhawks in Bufflin, and when he had to leave, and that, you know, he was definitely liked by all the fans, and it hurts seeing it, but you have to know that, you know, the NHL is a business, and Bufflin wanted more money than we could give him, and probably deserved more money than we were going to give him, so.
Yep. With keeping on the same track as emotional attachments, I was listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, and they were talking about if the Bulls were to get LeBron James, and some people are answering back and saying that they would not want LeBron James on the Bulls.
I'm sorry, but if you're a Bulls fan and you say that, you are not a Bulls fan. It's that. I don't care how you feel about the guy. He's the best player in the league. It's just.
That was my exact point. I'm like, why would you not want the best player in the league on your team?
That's like Bulls fans saying, you know what? I don't want to win a championship as long as this guy doesn't play for us. That sounds dumb to me, and I can't justify that. So that would be like a fair comparison. Who do I really hate? I don't know who I hate in baseball. A-Rod. That'd be like if I don't know if he's probably not a mutually agreed upon best player, but
no,
be like
that's
if
not
A-Rod.
Even close.
No,
it's like hating Mike Trout.
Yeah.
If you hated Mike Trout.
I'm not a Trout fan.
Wait,
if,
was that serious or not serious?
I'm being kind of serious. I don't know.
Why?
Just,
Mike Trout's fantastic.
I don't know.
Okay.
Not
all
a
right.
Fan of, I guess, younger play, like younger kind of like all star players. Not a fan of Puig.
Alright, Miguel Cabrera.
Miguel Cabrera. That'd be a good one. I don't hate Miguel Cabrera, though. It's hard to hate that guy.
But I know Sox fans that do.
It's hard. I mean, I respect that he's an incredible. He's the best player to ever play in the AL Central.
I don't know about
nope.
that.
I'm going to stick to it, and I believe that.
I don't know about that.
And I would not only jump for joy, I would probably run out of whatever building I was in and run around it a couple of times if the Sox, by some miracle, happened to get him. So I think that it means more about your team's success than a guy that you don't like joining the team.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, well, we're going to stick with the Bulls here, and we are going to bring in a guest, a special guest, and we will bring him in a moment. And here we go. We are pleased to be joined by the writer for Bulls Confidential on Chicago Now. He also does the Bulls Beat podcast, and it is Doug Tonis. Doug, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yep. This is Austin, by the way. I didn't introduce you guys while we were off
hey,
the air, so
Doug?
we're gonna do it right now. We were just talking about loyalty to or emotional attachments to players, and I was listening to some radio station today, and they were saying that some Bulls fans were calling in and saying that they wouldn't want LeBron James on their team. Please tell me they're idiots.
Well, I think it's hard to root for LeBron to be on your team because you know it's not likely to happen. But then if it actually happened, you know, that's kind of my view. I would imagine there are lots of Bulls fans who didn't want Scottie Pippen on the or not Scottie Pippen, sorry, Dennis Rodman on the Bulls because of all the fights he had with Scottie Pippen. But 3 years later, he was one of the most popular Bulls. So I think LeBron James, if by some miracle ended up here, it would be very similar.
Yeah, it's definitely not likely to happen. I know in your writing, you have him going back to Miami, correct?
I can't really see any other scenario that's going to unfold. I guess Houston maybe is a dark horse. I really don't think that he would come here.
Yeah, I agree with you. It'd be hard to lure him away from Miami just with the attachment to that team and the Big Three. With now setting our sights on the, I guess, second tier free agents, since LeBron's a whole nother tier of himself. What odds would you give the Bulls getting Carmelo Anthony, and what roster moves would have to happen to where that would happen?
I guess it depends on how it goes down. There's a lot of different permutations that could happen. So if Carmelo comes in a sign and trade because New York doesn't really want him that bad, or he forces his way out, then maybe the best case scenario is you send him Carlos Boozer, some future picks. That would be the dream scenario for Chicago Bulls fans, because you don't give up any real talent. You just give up some draft picks. More likely scenario is that we have to get him outright. And that's because he's already opted out now. And so the Knicks could not choose who the Bulls draft because you couldn't actually negotiate the whole deal till later. So there becomes that timing issue. They wouldn't really be able to get our picks this year and choose who they were. Going with that, it's most likely they'd have to give up Taj Gibson in order to make something work. Obviously, that's not maybe the best case for Bulls fans, but clearly, at least I would give up Taj Gibson in order to get Carmelo Anthony if that was a requirement.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, I know Taj is a fan favorite here, but if you're gonna try to get a top 10 player in the NBA, you're gonna have to give up Taj Gibson. That's fine.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And with oh, I'm trying to think. Austin, ask him a question. I gotta think of my next question.
Who just overall for the draft, who do you think that the Bulls are going to be drafting in the first round?
I think it's interesting. I would say what I could kind of see them doing is taking Rodney Hood and Adrian Payne, probably two of the best shooters in the draft. Both guys were over 40% in college. Adrian Payne's a senior. He's athletic. He's a big man, a stretch four. Rodney Hood is, I think he's a sophomore, if I'm not mistaken, either a freshman or a sophomore. And, somewhat athletic, small forward. But I think if you could draft those two guys, bring over Nikola Mirotic, and then keep DJ Augustin, if you think about that as sort of like the worst case scenario for the Bulls, you would have five shooters on the roster then, right? You'd have three Dunleavy, which would actually give the team some spacing, which they haven't had in a while. So I could see them maybe doing something like that. It really depends who falls down. Once you pick that low, it's hard to predict what happens in the picks above you, so that definitely influences what moves you might make.
Is there any chance of, or at least in your opinion, do you think there's any chance that we get Nick Stauskas out of Michigan?
Sure, there's a chance. It doesn't seem like on any of the mock drafts that he'll fall that far, but I don't know. I could see him potentially falling far enough that he could be there for our pick. I could also see the Bulls trading up and selecting him as well as a possibility. Him or Gary Harris or Doug McDermott, they've theoretically had a liking to as well. I probably wouldn't be quite as big a fan of McDermott as the other two. I would probably take Gary Harris if I was to trade up, but I'm not really a super huge college guy, so I kind of take my own opinion as a grain of salt relative to the people who spend a lot more time watching college basketball than myself.
And
You did.
back to the Carmelo Anthony thing. I saw today that the Mavericks traded Raymond Felton and Tyson Chandler. Do you think that had any influence on the Knicks trying to sign Melo again, trying to free up that cap space, maybe making a move at LeBron?
Well, it definitely has some influence on them, right? I mean, it'll be interesting to see which influence it has, because that could go in multiple ways. Say LeBron just re-signed to Miami. I mean, I think that is the most likely scenario. I don't really understand this whole thing that swept the nation of LeBron and Melo have to play together. They want to play together. This is just what's going to happen. LeBron and Melo play the same position, and as you get older, we saw how worn down, because was playing out of position for so much of the year. And if he plays small or if he plays big, either way, it's a big ask, because if he plays small, he's got to defend shooting guards and has to be very fast on defense and has to run around a lot more. If he plays big, he's dealing with more powerful players. either way wears you down over the course of the year. And you saw that in the finals, he was worn down. Does he really want to sign up for the next 4 years where either him or Melo has to play out of position nearly 100% of the time? It doesn't seem like it really has to be. And so I don't see that being a big lure to LeBron to go to New York to play with Melo. And in terms of cap space, some room for the Knicks to do something else, what else are they really going to do? I mean, if you don't get LeBron, who else has been out there that was going to entice Melo to want to stay anyway? I mean, Jrue Dang is like one of the top free agents this year. I mean, it's like a terrible class once you get past Carmelo Anthony, you know, as we know, because we're looking at the other guys because we have cap room. So it's not like it's like Carmelo's going to be like, yes, I'm staying in New York. We just got, you know, Jrue Dang or
Nick Young,
blank white dude's name from Utah, or Lance Stevenson. You know, I mean, it just doesn't seem like there's going to be anyone that would really change things for Carmelo. He's either going to stay there because he wants the money, or he's going to go somewhere else.
If you had to choose, if you were put in this position and both offers would work, would you rather have Carmelo or Kevin Love?
Kevin Love, for sure. He's 5 years younger. There was a recent article, I forget which side it was on, it was showing the offensive metrics of players and defensive metrics as players as they age. And so it turns out, basically, at 30, players offensively start to decline, and by 32, they fall off a cliff. So Carmelo Anthony's like right at that point. Kevin Love, you've got another 4 or 5 years where he's still improving and peaking. I think he's more of a team player anyway. Melo can definitely create his own shot better. But I would go with Kevin Love if I was given a choice.
Do you think he gets traded by draft day?
I'd say there's probably a 60% chance. It's hard to say how forceful Kevin Love has been, but it seems like he's been pretty forceful. And so if you're the Timberwolves, you're going to get a much better deal if you trade him on draft day than if you wait till the trade deadline. And so they could be trying to play the game of hoping they improve, and then if they improve enough, then maybe they'll convince Kevin Love to sign with them. But if he's told them, look, it's just not going to happen, then their best bet is definitely to trade him on draft day. They'll get more then than they will at another point in time.
Ultimately, in October, when the Bulls tip off, who's on their roster?
That is an interesting question. So I think Derrick Rose will be on the roster.
Yeah.
I Joakim Noah will be on the roster.
Okay.
I think Jimmy will be on the roster. Sadly, I think Tony Snell will still be on the roster. after that, it's kind of – Kirk Heimer will still be on the roster as minimum guy, I'm sure. After that, it's kind of a question mark. You know, you'll either end up with Carmelo Anthony, in which case I don't think Taj Gibson will be there, or you end up with a fallback where you get Taj Gibson and then Nikola Mirotic will come over. Getting Carmelo Anthony will almost certainly mean that Nikola Mirotic does not come over. I guess Carlos Boozer will be gone for sure. I'd give DJ Augustine maybe a 30% chance of staying. It's so difficult to predict what could happen with Chicago. So much is out of their own. You know, they'll go after Melo hard. They'll go after Kevin Love hard if he's on the trade market. But it doesn't mean either one will come here. And then after that, you don't know who they'll draft. So it's really kind of up in the air. I think that's what makes this offseason so exciting is you're kind of – you know things are going to get much better than last year. You just don't know in which direction they're going to get better. If you think about the draft scenario I entertained earlier where they pick two guys you can shoot and just bring over Mirotić and re-sign Augustine, that team is radically better than the team they had last year. So I think no matter what happens, Bulls fans can get a little bit more excited this year than they were the last couple years.
Austin, do you have anything?
I had nothing to add on top of that. Hoping that we just to relay back to the Melo or Love, and I definitely would agree that if we had the choice between the two, you definitely get Love just – simply for the age, and then you throw on top of there that now, I don't know how official it is. Derrick Rose has made comments about the fact that he would rather have Kevin Love, and Kevin Love seems like more of a team player than Melo would be. So would definitely pick Love over Melo, though I would not complain if Carmelo instead of Love. So
I got one more question for you, Doug. Is there any veteran minimum players that would be interesting for the Bulls to sign this offseason?
Veteran minimum guys. I can't say that I've honestly thought too much about Bettman guys yet. It's also always tricky because you never know who is going to actually land at the vet minimum and who's going to get more money than you think they will. It usually turns out the guys you think you can get for the veteran minimum end up signing, you know, somewhere else. It also will depend on how good of a chance the Bulls have to win and how much playing time they have offered. So the way you can get a good vet minimum player, I think, usually is if you have a good chance to win, because then someone's obviously excited to play for you. And then you also have to have a role to offer them. So I think in the scenario where the Bulls sign Carmelo Anthony, they'll probably have a pretty good shot at landing good vet minimum players, because they'll probably have lost a lot of their depth one way or the other, in which case they'll be both the role and a good chance. And I think that would be enticing. I think Kirk Heimrich, as I mentioned earlier, will definitely come back at the vet minimum. You know, his home is Chicago. He definitely did not have great experience in the league outside of Chicago. He likes playing, so I think he'll be back. Other than that, I think they'll probably look for another big man. You know, who's available will be a question mark. They still have Greg Smith, who's on the roster at the minimum. He'll probably, if he's healthy, fill out a decent role for them. At least he looked like he was on track to do that. I'm lousy host at this, or lousy guest at this point. I don't have answers. I just haven't looked at the list to see who's really available there.
All right. Actually, I got one more question. Could you explain to me? Well, not. I guess. Well, me, because I'm confused about it. Can you explain how the mid-level exception works, and how? Because I'm trying to figure out these salary caps and how they match up, and everything's just confusing when they throw in that mid-level exception.
Sure. So, if the Bulls are under the cap, then they don't get the mid-level exception at all.
Okay.
So, if they amnesty Boozer and they trade Gibson, and then they sign Carmelo with cap space, and we don't have to worry about the mid-level exception because it just doesn't exist.
Okay.
They get something called the room exception, which I want to say is around $3 million.
Okay.
That they could use to sign DJ Augustine. It might be a little less than that. Maybe it's $2 million. I forget the exact number. It's bigger than the minimum, but it's smaller than the mid-level exception. And I think it's only for 2 years you can sign someone.
Okay.
They play some cap games, and they work a sign-and-trade for fellow Anthony. Like, if they trade Boozer for him, then they officially stay over the cap, and then they would get the mid-level exception. The mid-level exception can potentially have two values. So it can be either $5 million and have a contract up to 4 years, or they could have what's called the mini mid-level exception, which is $3 million. And that would be if their total salary crosses the it's called the threshold, which is approximately $4 million over wherever the – or sorry, it's called the apron, which is $4 million over the luxury tax threshold, which I want to say this year, in the low 80 million range,
okay.
Maybe 485 million. So the odds are basically either the Bulls will use cap space and no mid-level, or they should have the full mid-level exception if they remain over the cap, because they'll still be considerably under the luxury tax.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Do you want to plug into your things?
I guess you can catch my blog, as mentioned earlier, is bullsconfidential.com. And my podcast, The Bulls Beat, is available on iTunes or my website, Bulls Podcasters, or my blog, you know, any of that stuff. And I'm sure if you just search for my name, you'll find anything you're looking for.
Yeah, your podcast is great. I listen to it every week, and I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was Doug Tonis, and we'll talk to you later, Doug. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thanks, Doug.
And that was Doug Tonis. We give a big thank you to him for coming on, talking Bulls with us. This podcast has run extremely long. We're up to like 39 minutes right now. And we're just going to jump right into final thoughts. Austin, what you got?
I tuned this out earlier today, and I feel like I'm kind of a spoiled brat White Sox fan now, in that it's become a normal sight to see that Abreu is homered, and there's almost a little bit of a letdown when you look at a box score or you watch a game and he doesn't hit a home run. And I was just thinking about it today, and that just sounds like so like bratty, like, wow, sorry he doesn't hit a home run every single game. So I think that's a nice luxury, at least for the Sox, who are in the process of just completely taking away their season. So,
Yeah, I feel
That's
you.
my final thoughts.
My final thought is going to be on the other first baseman in town, Anthony Rizzo. He's having an all-star year, but will not get any consideration because of fan voting in the all-star game is what I was going to say. But regardless, hopefully he gets a spot. Him and Castro have been leaps and bounds higher than anything I could have ever expected. I knew going into this year that was a huge thing with them. They needed to grow in their maturity and get ready for the 2015-2016 year that we're going to be hopefully good. And I think he's having a fantastic year. And him and Abreu's stats are pretty close. You can compare them. And I think that's going to be a great debate for the next 10 years, hopefully, that which first baseman would you rather have?
Right now, I'd say Abreu. It's hard to say that he's going to keep up with his stats where he's at, but
Well, I wasn't really asking you, but
oh, okay. I thought that you were opening that up.
I was just saying in
Oh yeah,
general.
over the course of the next couple of years, it will be interesting to see.
Yeah.
A little bit of a 1-2 punch, should I say, Paul Konerko and Derek Lee.
Yep. All right. Well, that's going to conclude episode 17, famous 17s in Chicago history.
Alshon Jeffrey.
Yeah, pretty much where we're going to go, Alshon. Mark Grace played with the Cubs, led the 90s in doubles and hits. But right now, I think we got to stick with Alshon. Sheldon Brookbank for the Hawks is another good one. I don't know who's 17 on the Sox. I feel like Ross Gloed was it for a little bit, which is hilarious. But Chris Bryant was 17 in the Arizona Fall League, so maybe.
I think you're stretching there.
Well, maybe. Well, all right, we'll give it to Alshon. And well, that was episode 17. It ran a little long, but that's all right. You can follow us on Twitter at Shy Bench Thought. You can like us on Facebook at Thoughts from the Bench. You can download our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And you can also watch our podcast on YouTube. Make sure you check out our blog. We will be tweeting out links and hopefully some blog posts. I posted one today, so hopefully we could get those going daily and give you guys more content when we don't have a podcast. We're probably gonna shoot for you gotta work next Friday.
That's Friday.
It's the
No,
4th.
wait. Is that's July 4th? I
Okay.
do actually.
Okay,
That's
so well, regardless,
we'll try to get another
I'll be
podcast
in
sometime.
Yeah, I'll be in Iowa next Wednesday, so we can't do it. But maybe Monday, something like that. We'll figure it out. But we'll at least come at you with one podcast next week. So that's gonna wrap up episode 17. Austin, good as always.
Glad to be here.
always. And
Man of many words.
and we'll talk to you guys next week.